Good day, South Dakota, and welcome to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. I'm your host, Ken Osborne. On today's program, we'll discuss the latest in tech news, including a few April Fool's Day backfires for those using Gmail, and the FCC yesterday made several really interesting decisions along party lines, and we'll tell you what they are on today's show. Plus, your calls, texts, emails, and Facebook posts. We'd love to hear from you. Send your questions via email. midday@sdpb.org is the email address, or send a tweet to @sdpb. Join the discussion on our Facebook page at facebook.com/techradio, or call now, 800-524-3604. You can email your suggestions to our guests today. We have Amos Aesop here and Jeff Litterick to answer your questions. That email address again, midday@sdpb.org. We'll be on the air right after this news from SDPB Radio. And welcome back to Tech Radio, featuring the Computer Guys. We've gathered the experts to talk tech today and answer questions you may have in that area. In the studios of KCSD in Sioux Falls with me today is Amos Aesop. Hey, Amos.
Hey, how you doing?
I am well, sir. How are you?
Good, good. So far, I have not fallen victim to any nefarious pranks.
You know,
today.
I rolled out of bed this morning and I just kind of cringed and went, man, what's going to happen today?
I just don't believe anything until
what am I going to have to deal with?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. From the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Pierce, South Dakota, Jeff Litterick also joins us today. Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello.
Do you get pranked today at all?
I've been looking at pranks, but not pranked myself, no.
What's the funniest one you saw that was actually funny?
There's different levels. Blizzard always does a really good, they do videos and release notes for their games, and they cover just about every game they do, and they're actually pretty funny, like turning Hearthstone into an MMO, because it's based off an MMO. And if you don't know, Hearthstone is actually a card game that was based off World of Warcraft, and they announced in a nice video that they're going to turn the card game into an MMO. So, stuff like that. Special release notes really screwing up the game, so to speak. You kind of have to know the games you're playing, like StarCraft II or World of Warcraft, to understand those things. It was kind of funny because last year and the year before for Blizzard, they always do April Fools, but it's been kind of toned down, and I was just thinking, all the good April Fools jokes, I haven't really seen any for a while. The gaming companies used to be a common that every gaming company released massive amounts of April Fools stuff, but it kind of died down over the years. But this year it's a little bit more on an uptake. I'm seeing more stuff out there, including some bad ones.
Yeah, yeah. The game I play brought back this thing called Super Adventure Box, which is a game inside of a game, but it's an 8-bit version of a game. So you're taking this, a visually stunning, wonderful alternative world kind of a game, and then you walk through this door, and it's like walking back into the very first Nintendo. it's just kind of, and the music's all kind of, hokey and very Nintendo like, and it's different. But that they released that a few years ago on April Fools, and they brought it back for this April Fools Day, and I don't know what the deal is, but it was just wildly and participated in yesterday. Once it was released, I saw people online that I haven't seen in a very long time came back to play an 8-bit experience in a modern game. It was weird. It was weird. Amos, there was a few things that didn't really that kind of fell flat today too.
Well, just like Jeff was saying, that the gaming folks tend to do a lot. Google always goes kind of out and about and over the top, and I think I found about 12 or 13 different things that Google's done, including if you go to youtube.com, you can watch all the videos in what's called Snoop-a-Vision, which includes Snoop Dogg. So
what?
Go check that out. It's kind of fun. Snoop Dogg watches the videos with you. There's another one where when you drop the little peg man on your Google Maps, it's no longer the standard yellow guy. It's now kind of a 70s funky guy who is on roller skates.
Disco
roller skates
is now the peg guy.
And if you do some searching on there, you can find some other Easter eggs in that as well. But then there's the one that Google released, and I actually saw it last night, probably 9, 10 o'clock. It had already been released, and so far, it didn't go over very well, and they've already pulled it back. And that is putting a animated GIF or an animated image in your email of a minion from Despicable Me who drops a mic, which is usually indicative of the end of the conversation. And they replaced the button in your Gmail for send an archive, which is actually a pretty useful button, right? And you reply to an email and you're done with it. You hit send and archive. So it sends the email that you replied to, and it also takes it out of your inbox and moves it somewhere into the archive folder so that it's not in your way anymore. But by using that button just through sheer muscle memory, people are sending this minion mic drop animated GIF to people who really they shouldn't be sending it to, whether it's through a business email. Some people are claiming they've lost jobs over this. Maybe it might be because they were applying for a job and they replied to somebody, for an application. And so Google pulled that back pretty fast because it wasn't working out like they wanted it to.
One of the worst things about that, too, is not only did it drop the mic, but Google blocked all replies back to the email. So if anyone replied back asking what this was or what's going on, the user who sent the email would never receive a reply back to that change. So, and it also had some bugs in it where it would accidentally send it out when you didn't want it to. So, yeah, it's kind of blown up, especially in Europe, because they're ahead of us. And a lot of people very unhappy with the Gmail April Fool's joke this year.
That's unfortunate. So it actually archived the chain of emails and then blocked the person.
Right. Yeah. And if it was an important email that you might get a response to, well,
I don't know what's funny about that, but I don't know. Maybe it's just me. I don't know.
You know, as much as they do, they were bound to stumble upon something that didn't get thought all the way through and would cause a problem.
You know, there's a guy that he does claim that he lost a job because of this, because the boss on the other end, you know, didn't get the joke. And mm-hmm. and I just wonder after today if they'll look back, after all the news this is making, and they'll say, oh, yeah, you know, this guy, you know, he meant to archive the thing. Mm-hmm. He sent me a mic drop. Ha ha. He gets his job, or he gets the job back, or he gets the job that he was applying for, or whatever. But I don't know. It's nutty.
Yeah, and hopefully that happens. One of them was a writer who was submitting drafts to his editor/publisher, and he was getting worried because he wasn't receiving replies back, while the other side was getting mad because they were saying stuff, and the time deadline was today, and he wasn't responding because of that block. So, until he got an angry voicemail message from his publisher demanding what's going on, he never knew that the stuff he set off, they were waiting they had replied to him, and they were waiting for stuff. So I think that more than anything, it probably is the root of a lot of stuff where, okay, you sent me this, I replied back, why aren't you replying to me? Because people kind of got used to email. Email always works, right? They always are going to get it. They're always going to see it and be able to reply and stuff, especially if it's important. So it kind of broke that fundamental trust of email. When I reply to something, that person's going to see it.
Yeah, exactly, and it took a phone call and a little bit of a personal touch to get that straightened out. But yeah, you're right. Sometimes you send an email and you're just kind of hanging, and it's an interesting phenomenon. It really is. You can join the discussion today. Our Facebook page, facebook.com/techradio. I guess if you prank somebody today, and you thought it was funny, I don't know if the person on the other end thought it was funny, but we'd love to hear about it. Facebook.com/techradio. You can call now, 800-524-3604. And the most popular way that most people do, again, is email, midday@sdpb.org. Don't use Gmail, so we're not going to drop the mic on you, but that's an interesting phenomena for today. Tell us about your April Fool's jokes. 800-524-3604, the number, and midday@sdpb.org is the email address. Of course, if you're just out on Twitterverse, I guess, second screening us today, at SDPB is where you can send a tweet as well. We'd love to hear from you. The panelists are here. We have Amos Aesop here in the studio, and Jeff Litterick from the Bureau of Information and Telecommunications in Peer as well to take your calls today. We do have a couple of calls coming in. What are some of the other Google things that you saw there? You said there's about a dozen of them out there.
There was quite a few. One of them, which, and I haven't tried it. I haven't tried real hard on this one, but one of them is a revolution in photo searching. If you're using the Microsoft, I'm sorry, that's embarrassing. If you're using the Google Photos app and you're doing a search, if you search by emoji, for instance, if you put in the emoji of a dog, it's supposed to actually go through and look for any pictures that have dogs in them, and I'm being told that actually works. I'm failing to get it to work, but I'm sure it probably does, just because I'm seeing all of the items that are. Actually, I take that back. Now maybe it was one of those things that just needed an update, because now when I put an emoji of a dog in, it actually pulled up pictures of my dogs. So that's kind of cool, and then maybe that'll be something that stays. I don't know, but it's interesting that it actually works.
Did you have to tag those as pictures of your dog, or does it just know that they're dogs?
It just knows that they're dogs.
Is it facial recognition, or what do you call it when it's an animal?
Object recognition, I guess.
Yeah,
but it's able to pull up everything that's got a dog in my phone. So that's kind of interesting, I guess. One of the ones I saw last night, which I thought was kind of interesting, Google Cardboard. If you haven't seen Google Cardboard before, it's a way, it's actually just literally a piece of cardboard that you put your phone in, but it's a kind of viewing mechanism that includes some lenses that allows you to see special formatted videos on your phone and basically turn it into a poor version of the VR, of the virtual reality systems. They've now come out with a new version today, which is the Google Cardboard Plastic, which is just a piece of plastic you strap to your head that's see-through, and it says everything's in 3D, everything's in vibrant colors, everything looks so real because it's just a piece of plastic that you're
just looking through a piece of plastic. We've got Andrew on the line from Columbia. Andrew, what's your April Fool's comment today?
I read the story last night on my computer. It was on a construction website, and they had Mexico decides to build $10.9 billion wall, and it went through the whole schematic of how it was going to build the wall, I think from California over to Texas, and you had to read probably 15, 20 paragraphs until it said, oh, April Fools.
Wow.
They had this two-cab excavator that was a loader, excavator, crane, and they had a picture of the contraption too on the website. And
so this was like an all-in-one wall building machine that you would basically drive from California to Texas, and it would create this wall.
Yeah, it was like I said, it was so specific. They talked about they were going to have wildlife passages so animals can cross the border so the wall wouldn't impede animals.
Migration.
No, it was halfway believable.
Well, hey, thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah.
And thanks for sharing that. You know, you got to admire somebody that goes to great lengths to pull off something like that. It's going to be so specific and not just an afterthought kind of a thing, but they really put some work into it.
You know, and I think the effort is the key word there. It's amazing how much productivity is lost simply for this one day. You know, all that effort, the fact that you can search with an emoji, you know, the programming that had to go into that had to be quite a bit, and the number of people who had to work on it and test it and that sort of stuff. So there's a lot of work that goes into those. I'm also seeing here that Lexus, the maker of some sporty automobiles, has made seats made out of Velcro so that when you go around a corner at a high rate of speed, you don't come out of your seat. So, you know, and it's actually it's a YouTube video, and it's very well done, and they put a lot of effort into this as well. So it's an amazing holiday and the effort that people go through to make fun things like this. But it's a lot of fun.
You'd have to start you know, a well-crafted YouTube video is not something you start last week.
Right.
You know?
Right.
This is something that you have to, from concept to fruition, is going to take a while.
You know,
this is interesting. We'll have to maybe come up with something for next year.
Last year on Google Maps, you were able to take Pac-Man and drive or move him around on Google Maps as, you know, through the streets. And that was interesting. But the amount of effort that it takes to make that happen is...
Through Street View?
Yep. No, through the just through the maps view, you could, you know, just like it was the Pac-Man game, you could use your the arrow keys and move around in your streets.
Like on your favorite streets or something. That's kind of cool. Well, this is all interesting. We do have a lot of news to talk about, actual tech news to talk about on the show today. A number of things from the FCC yesterday, and we're going to get to those things right after this break. And welcome back to this April 1st edition of Tech Radio featuring the Computer Guys. Amos Aesop is here. Jeff Litterick from Peer taking your calls and questions via email, your Facebook posts all today, even Twitter at SDPB if you prefer to do that. A lot of things with the FCC yesterday, a lot of news, and a lot of them were kind of controversial. They were along party lines, 3-2 votes. And the first thing that struck me, I guess, as a former alderman is I really can't believe that this body that oversees the telecommunications industry is a partisan system of government.
That does seem surprising.
At the root level, the city level that I was involved in, we didn't run as Democrats, Republicans, Independents, you know, Libertarians, whatever. We were all just doing our best for what we could do. But I was... You know, when I heard these 3-2 votes along party line, this was a 3-2 vote along party line, this is a 3-2 vote, I'm like, party lines? What's that got to do with regulation of this giant multi-billion-dollar communications industry? But that's the way they do it. But
the people don't know, each commissioner, for most of these types of commissions, FTC, SEC, are appointed by the president. So that's where you tend to get, when you have a Republican president, you have a Republican majority. And when you have a Democratic president, you get a Democratic majority. They're fairly long term. So once they're appointed, kind of like a judge, until their term is up, they stay in office. And some of those terms actually are as long, if not longer, than the president. So you tend to get these really weird splits where almost always whoever is the president's party has one vote majority. You don't tend to get really balanced where everybody is one side or the other, just because of the way the terms work out, unless there's a whole string of presidents of one party. So it's a system they designed. So
yeah, all right. So one of the were you surprised, I guess, Jeff, that they looked into the whole, there's an investigation into the Netflix throttling by some of the mobile video providers. And the FCC basically said that's outside of the net neutrality rules that they adopted last year because they're not regulating edge providers or websites or anything. Did that kind of surprise you?
Well, no. You have to understand there's a lot of laws and regulations backing all the way back to when the FCC was first formed back in the 1920s that they have to buy. And CERTIT classes of data transmit, i.e. telephone companies, cable companies, fall under different what they call common carrier rules. And that limits what the FCC can do or not do. And in fact, the FCC is trying to enforce common carrier rules on cable companies' internet access right now. They weren't covered before so that they can regulate them because without them being labeled as a common carrier, the FCC has no jurisdiction whatsoever in any way, shape, or form over what they do or how they do it. An N-site context would not be considered a carrier, so to speak, a common carrier, a Netflix, a YouTube kind of stuff, though Google in its Google Fiber role would be considered a common carrier. So, I can see where they sometimes have to back off and say, we just can't do that. And almost one thing to remember with the FCC is almost any action they take anymore since the 1997 Communications Act, it goes through lawsuits. Everyone sues them over every ruling they make, and it can take 5 to 6 years after ruling before it becomes law because literally I don't think they've made a major decision that's not been in a decade-long court case. So.
Hmm. That's one interesting thing. The other, the big thing, I guess, that interested me was, and we've talked about it on the show before, basically the thought of treating internet or broadband even as a utility. I know we've mentioned that on the show, like sure. Like water service and whatever,
electricity,
and yeah. So what they came up with yesterday, or what they passed, was an expansion of what was that called?
The Lifeline
program, which if you all recall, is subsidized phone service or cell phones for the poor and disabled and people on different federal programs. They have a certain income and they qualify for certain benefits. And what they did was they added broadband, or their definition, actually not even their definition, a different definition of broadband to that list. So people will be able to get subsidized internet at home, I think $9.95 a month.
Well, you know, it's become such a an item of need anymore. It used to be something that was consumption based, and it was, you know, to watch videos and to send email and things that you didn't need for day-to-day activities or life activities. But now when you've got things where you need to apply for a job, and the only way they allow you to apply is online, or when you need to receive information from somebody who doesn't send things through the mail anymore, the only way they do it is through email. Some of these services are just requirements anymore. And so that's where they step in and subsidize these things, because it's no longer considered something that is just fun. It's a necessity anymore.
What this it says is that if you're eligible for other federal programs for the poor or disabled Americans and meet certain income-based requirements, they qualify for the Lifeline subsidy. Examples include Medicaid, veterans pensions, Supplemental Security Income, SSI, food stamp program known as Supplemental Nutrition Assistance Program, or SNAP. The FCC will vote to do the, basically, they passed this. And the example they gave, I thought it was a fairly interesting example. It's a person in San Francisco that lost her job, decides to go back to school. Is obviously of not much means monetarily. She cannot afford to purchase food and drinks at the coffee shops that offer free Wi-Fi. She sits on the sidewalk to take advantage of the signal to do her schoolwork until she's asked to leave, because I suppose she's seen as a loiterer, a vagrant, or whatever, but she's usually asked to leave. She was known to sneak into hotels, sneak onto the elevators, pretend to be a guest. Basically, she has to find an internet access code from somebody that's either, a worker there or a guest at the hotel. So, it's really legitimizing this person and saying, here's a reasonably priced, hopefully something you can afford monthly fee for to get internet access. So you can get your schoolwork done. You mentioned job searching. There's lots of very legitimate reasons, not just entertainment or Netflix or whatever, but just real reasons that this should be treated as a utility.
It's no longer a luxury. It's now becoming a necessity in many aspects.
And that's the groundbreaking thing of that decision yesterday in my mind, was that that this was added to this list of benefits. So. Interesting, I thought.
One thing and this kind of corresponds to kind of an extension of this, but the FCC's been trying to do this for a long time. Let's just say they've been talking about, many people may know of a program called E-Rate, where the FCC takes taxes from all the common carriers. You pay it on your cell phone bill and on your landline bill. And they redistribute based off need back to schools for broadband access and internet access type of technologies. There's also a thing called the Universal Service Fund, which this comes out of, that you pay into. Everyone does that has a cell phone. It's part of your taxes, and that pays for telephone service for rural people. A lot of people in South Dakota get it because we're a rural state. And it costs a lot of money to run telephone lines out to a ranch 30 miles, right? So the ranch would never be able to afford the telephone without this subsidy from the federal government that evens out the cost of telephone usage for everybody. And the SEC has been big in trying to turn off the telephone subsidy and have an internet broadband subsidy, where instead of subsidizing telephones for rural, they just subsidize internet access, and then you'd get your phone service to the internet. So
this is a
part of a stepping stone kind of in that they've been trying to work on for 10 years or so. So it's another piece that they view internet as a utility that everyone should have a basic minimum access to, no matter if wherever you're at an affordable rate.
So the handy stat of the day, I guess, that puts this into perspective is, it says today 39 million households qualify for Lifeline as it stands right now. Of that number, 13.5 million have no internet access. Another 2.2 million have internet access, but it's only through a mobile device. So what they're talking about doing is really targeting those other people that have no internet access at all. Those 13.5 million. So that's a chunk of people. That's a lot. And I sort of wish them well on this. And it's an interesting thing. And it's something that, I don't know, I didn't expect to come to fruition, I guess, this soon, but here it is. And we'll definitely be following up on this. Jeff, there was one more thing that they did yesterday, that was very controversial, and that had to do with, rules imposing, strong privacy regulations on internet service providers. Do you know any more details about that?
Yeah, Well, let's just say there were no rules in place before this. And remember, they are trying to get more internet providers into the regulation. So depending on how that court fight actually turns out, because they're being sued over it, we'll make a play and who can regulate what. But what they're trying to do is block ISPs from sharing your personal data along with your IP address and network information, identification information to, like, third-party marketers and advertising stuff. Yes, they can still sell, email lists and stuff like that, but without a personal identification information that would identify you on the Internet. For example, they would say, sell to Google, this is John Doe, and his IP address is this, so that Google and their ads would always know, this is who you are, and could tie all their data they get from cookies and your IP address that they see surfing their website, and tie it to a real person with a real address and phone number. That's the main goal of this, is try to prevent that from ever happening. So, while they can still do some stuff, just like any company can, many companies sell your information to a certain, they can't bundle it so that the end user can then tie your machine and internet access to you and your personal information.
And let me just kind of be the devil's advocate here, though. Hasn't the argument been from the advertisers that we're just trying to basically get you ads that are more interesting to you? So basically, yeah, I wouldn't be getting ads for daycares for small children, because all my children are growing.
And remember, this is only from the ISP. The second you go out to a website and they are advertising a sweepstakes or something, and you fill out your information, they already have that. The advertiser who set that up has your IP address and has all the information you filled out. And that's still legal because you technically gave it to them instead of a third party, i.e. your ISP in this case. So,
okay, all right.
This is not going to block that from connecting. It just blocks them from automatically doing it without your knowledge. If you go to a website and you fill out information, they have all that information anyway. So,
let me see if I understand this then. So the rules that the FCC is trying to, if they're sued and they prevail, is they don't want the ISPs to transport basically that data without your knowledge to these other sites,
yes,
or to other ISPs.
Yes, your personal information that, identifies you and your location on the Internet. So they could sell you, they could probably sell that you're a customer of them, i.e. your name, but not your IP address, and depending on how this all falls out, your email address, stuff like that,
okay,
without your permission. Now, if they make it part of the contract to and put this information in that that they can do this and you sign off, well, then they can still do it again, so...
I think I just understood the whole crux of this is basically they're customer database with your IP address, that information is not shared without your basically signing off. Okay, I got it. I was trying to make it more complicated than it was.
That's what the advertisers really love, because if you surf CNN, then they could target ads directly to you because they know from you buying on Amazon your name. Now they know your IP address, so once you go to CNN, the CNN website sees your IP address and can do directed targets without cookies just based off your IP address. They would love that. And they can get that, like I said, in multiple ways already if you give them that information, but they just don't want the ISPs to sell that your information, that you have to give it freely away yourself.
Okay. Yeah, I got it. Okay. So anyway, join the discussion today on our show, Tech Radio. It's April 1st. It's April Fool's Day. We've covered some of the pranks available. We would like to hear more. Send those to our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Tech Radio is the way to do that. Or you can call now. 800-524-3604 is the number. You can email your suggestions to our guests today. We have Amos Ace up here and Jeff Litterick to take your questions and your comments. midday@sdpb.org, M-I-D-D-A-Y, midday@sdpb.org is the email address. And, of course, @sdpb, the Twitter handle, if you'd rather send us a tweet. That would be outstanding as well. We love the reach that we get from those Twitter messages. So we'll do more with the show here. We have a quick break to take. It is that time to get into the third segment of the show. When we come back, we've got some Tesla news we're going to get into. And Amos, there was some other... we're going to do the DraftKings ruling, or the, I guess, really the compromise with ESPN and DraftKings and FanDuel. We've talked about that on the show before. There's some interesting NCAA news in that front. But all that's coming back after this quick break. We should probably talk about DakotaCon coming up this weekend, too, up at Dakota State.
Yes.
We'll try to get to that before the end of the show as well.
Okay.
But after this show, it's Science Friday, of course, they're going to talk about the emotional side of gaming. Games that make you laugh, Rites of Spring. It's going to be an interesting discussion on gaming and things and emotions in Science Friday today. So just stay tuned, I guess, is what I'm saying, and we'll get to that. We were just talking during the break. Did I get the message from Facebook about was I all right after one of the Pakistan bombings?
Well, you know, we were talking in that earlier story about how the internet has become a necessity instead of a luxury, and one of the benefits that has come out of that is the ability to let people know when you're okay. When something catastrophic has happened in the world, for instance, the bombings in Brussels or even in Pakistan. And actually, one of my friends here in Sioux Falls, Facebook had sent out a message asking, are you okay? Have you been affected by the recent suicide bombing in Pakistan? And generally, they just send that out to the people who are in that geographical area,
right?
And it's just a quick message that allows you to reply back safe if you're okay, or out if you're out of the area, and then that updates your Facebook to allow friends and family that you know you're good. Well, friends here in Sioux Falls received that, and so there was obviously a glitch in the system that caused that message to go out to geographically incorrect places for that particular event, and Facebook is attempting to fix that and make sure that doesn't happen again. But for those friends who got it, a couple of them actually posted the screen capture to Facebook and said, "This is weird. Why would I in Sioux Falls need to let people know?"
So, yeah, that's too bad, and I hope they get the bugs worked out of it, because I think that's a great feature.
It is.
I had a friend, I still have a friend, fortunately, that was in Brussels at the time of the subway bombing there, and I saw this sort of robo reply in my Facebook stream that said, "I'm in Brussels, I'm okay," mm-hmm. And that's really nice, because if you know somebody that is in an area, and I've seen these. They do things with earthquakes and obviously terrorist attacks and other things. But this is a neat thing. If you know that you've a friend or a loved one or somebody close to you is in an area, a geographic area that is being affected by weather or an incident or whatever, and they don't particularly have time to sit down and write anything, it's nice to see that note that says, hey, they're okay.
Mm-hmm.
Especially since they are okay. I think that's a great feature.
It is. It's a great use of technology.
Too bad they screwed up the geolocating thing, but they'll get it.
Well, you know, and luckily it didn't work out for the bad, right? I mean, there was nothing posted that said somebody wasn't okay when they truly were. It just simply was asking the questions of people who were irrelevant for the particular location.
Yeah. And it touched somebody here in Sioux Falls, and that's very interesting. But on the converse side, somebody from the Dakotas was near Brussels, and it let everybody know that he was okay. I thought that was really kind of cool. Anyway, moving on to a couple other stories here before the end of the show. Something else of note that we've talked about on the show, and that's the DraftKings and FanDuel websites that have these basically the fantasy sports operators that you can go online and participate and try to win money. And we've talked about it on the show in the terms of, is this gambling? Is this illegal or legal? And this has been through the courts a number of times in a number of states even. The announcement is that and you do this all online, and that's the technological part of this. DraftKings and FanDuel are going to stop offering college fantasy games in a deal with the NCAA and member institutions and various state legislatures. So they all came to a compromise and said no mas on the college games. I found that kind of interesting.
And yet nothing related to pro.
No, not
stuff.
Yet.
Well, one thing to remember is, and this has been widely reported, the MLB, baseball, and NFL are actually partners with both of those and have endorsed kind of both and encouraged both. They have special deals and stuff. Of course, they're private and we don't know, but most of the major sports, maybe even the NBA, I'm not sure about them, have actually kind of endorsed, which is kind of interesting because the NFL for many years tried to quash fantasy football and gambling in general. And most of the sport leagues, NBA, especially baseball, don't like gambling, but they kind of have gotten in with this. So there's been frontline specials on this, on these issues going on, and it's kind of interesting because there's a lot of interesting partners that normally are opposed to each other that are kind of ganged up on the same side in for this particular niche type of fantasy gaming.
Yeah, so just an update, I guess, on the piece of news there. We've also talked quite extensively on the show about Elon Musk and Tesla over the years and his innovations and the revelation that, I heard this on NPR this morning, 135,000 reservations for that car, the Model 3, on the first day of ordering. And I inferred from the quote from Elon Musk on NPR this morning that that was kind of rather shocking to him.
Well, it's the first affordable Tesla car. Retail price, I believe, is either $32,000 or $33,000 for the base price, which pits it in with a lot of the other kind of sedan-type electric cars in terms of pricing. So I guess it didn't really surprise me because I even thought that number was a little bit low considering what Chevrolet's been doing with their Volt sales and the Prius sales and, you know, those other types of some of those other types of cars that it's a little bit on the high, but are in that general price range are doing so.
And, you know, this is really where Elon Musk was going with this. This was really what he had in mind when he started Tesla, was that he would get to be able to sell cars at a price that was reasonable and affordable to the average consumer at, you know, $30,000 to $35,000. But he had to be able to make the cash to do that with the higher end stuff. So he started with the supercar, moved, you know, down into something that was a little more SUV-like, and now they're betting everything on this Tesla Model 3, which, you know, from these looks, if you're putting $1,000 down and 130,000 people did that, that's quite a good bankroll to be going with as well. and production isn't slated to start until the end of next year. So they've got a little bit of work to do on. They're still, you know, the numbers aren't 100% yet, but they're saying they expect it to be at least 215 miles per between charges. They expect to double the number of chargers available in the United States to a total of like a little over 7,000 superchargers. These are the equivalent of a gas pump, right? Where you park your car, you plug it into something a little bit more than just an extension cord, and it charges the car at a pretty high rate of speed, such that it doesn't really impede your travel plans. Because if you've got to stop and charge the car for 4 hours every 4 hours that you drive it,
yeah. It
really doubles the amount of time, you know, that you've got to take to move from across the country. So they're working on improving those superchargers, making more of them, and they're really, if you go out and you look at Tesla's website, they show you where they currently are, and they've done a good job of putting them on the major highways that, you know, that cross the United States. So you don't have to go out of your way to find one. They're going to be on. In fact, they're all across I-90 that you can stop and supercharge those. And usually they're placed at a location where while your car is charging, there's something of semi interest to do. Maybe it's eat or shop or something else.
And it's kind of interesting. It's kind of actually great timing on their part because the news is leaking. For a lot of people that would be interested in this type of car for all the benefits, a lot of them have actually been buying diesel cars in the past because they're more affordable and they were supposed to be green for the environment and all this stuff. And really, the news is coming now and breaking that the diesels, as everyone may know, there was a scandal with Volkswagen, Porsche, and other people where they were cheating the emission standards in California and other places. They're not going to be able to fix those engines. They will never meet the emission standards. So a lot of those people are very upset, and if you can make an affordable electric car for them, they will jump on that very fast because that's the reason they bought the car that they did, that they found out is not as green as they thought they were. And most of them just did it from interviews because electric cars were so much more expensive. So
yeah, and
it's kind of a good timing all around for Tesla.
If you've never set foot on a car lot recently, if you haven't, you'll know that $30,000 for a car is not really out of line.
No, and let's be honest, it's a cool car, even for the masses type car, right? I mean, it's got full glass from the windshield to the back window. The entire ceiling is glass. It comes with all of the technology built into it, including some of the autopilot stuff that's been in the higher end cars. It's got a 15-inch touchscreen display in the center for all of the controls that are available within the mm-hmm. car.
Neat.
And the car is software upgradable. You know, it's not like you've got to swap out a piece of hardware in this. Through the internet, you can update your car when new technologies come out that make it better. There it is.
Tesla in many ways is on the leading edge of that with the software updates. For their existing some of their existing cars, they've already released a software update for auto driving on freeways and highways. They still warn you not to remove your hands very far from the wheel, but it will auto keep lanes and stuff on highways and stuff, so automatically slow down in traffic, stuff like that. And that was through a software update. That wasn't buying a new car. Like you'd have to do in the past. Oh, that's a new feature. Go buy a new car. Tesla tends to just do it through software updates. So if there's a new feature coming out, you're going to get it in your car, just like upgrading your computer.
They have a feature that I thought was, and maybe I haven't thought this through enough, but it seems silly to me, is that the ability for the car to open the garage door and back itself out and be ready for you to go, so that you can just walk outside and get in the car and go. Well, my guess is previously those cars were $100,000. You probably had your garage attached to the house and didn't need to walk outside to get in it anyway.
Yeah.
But it's a neat technology. And like we've talked about on previous episodes, we start with these fun little things that aren't really all that useful, but it allows us to learn from them. It allows us to take that technology and grow it. And soon... Then you end up with things that can drive themselves down the road. So I always thought that was an oddball one for them to come out with.
So I wonder what kind of software is involved with making it so that the car doesn't run over its owner.
Right.
And then... Well, and then does Facebook pop up a thing that says, "Are you okay?" I don't know.
Now, if you think about it, it was a great test bed for auto parking of cars. Most driveways are less congested and stuff than trying to do a parallel park on a busy street in New York, right? So if you really think about it from that point, it's a good test bed to get all the fundamentals down before you advance into more auto park situations where it is more congested, it is more hectic, there's more unknown obstacles to deal with.
Absolutely. Hey, we want to wrap this the Tesla talk up because we've got just a couple of minutes left, and we got to give some love to just up the interstate from us here in Madison. DakotaCon starts today. In fact, if you weren't listening to the show, you'd probably be listening to former Governor Rounds is speaking up there. It's a security conference. They call it, and I'm going to quote their website, an epic weekend of security fun at Dakota State University. You can stream a watch live most of this, if not all of it. It is today, starts today through the 3rd. DakotaCon.org is the website. We'll throw that, of course, out on the Facebook page so you can get to that. But there's already some videos up there from the tracks that you can watch live. I imagine that it's all on YouTube. So go ahead, Jeff.
And remember, it's an annual event. So if you miss this year, a lot of people from the state actually go there. A lot of my colleagues are there today and through the weekend. It is an annual event. Takes place almost the exact same time every year. So if you miss this one, don't forget to sign up for next year. Some of the tracks go fairly quickly once they release registration. So you do kind of need to plan a little bit for it because it's a very good conference that I've attended in the past.
Yeah, and these are great topics. The one Senator Mike Rounds is talking about right now, legislating cybersecurity, obviously he'd be a fairly good expert on that. The intersection of security and usability. Michael, I'm going to slaughter his last name here, Idema, is talking at 1 o'clock today, 1 Central, of course, on that. And then John Strand at 2 o'clock, If I Wake Evil. Let's all watch that together. 2 o'clock today. DakotaCon.org is the website. Just again up the road in Madison, going on the next 3 days.
If you're into security, DSU does a lot more than just the DakotaCon events. Senator John Thune actually brought his entire Senate committee here last year to talk about cybersecurity and legislation, and had an entire Senate committee meeting at DSU. So do kind of watch out. They do a lot of different conferences and specials like that at DSU for security.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, lots of coursework there for those maybe thinking of starting it or going into another career. I know a lot of people have checked into that and made the transition to a whole other career in technology and security and database management and whatever through DSU. So got some great programs for you. If you're thinking about that, you can do a lot of that online. And DakotaCon.org is a great place to start there.
It's truly an amazing resource that we have in the middle of the prairie up here that people just assume is not something you'd find typically in South Dakota.
Yeah, great. That is unfortunately all the time we have for today's show. I want to thank our panelists, Amos Aesop. Thanks for being here, Amos. And Jeff Litterk from BIT and Peer. I want to remind you that the next show, April 15th, that's 2 weeks from today, another Tech Radio. That SDPB is, of course, always there for you. Our app in the Apple and the Google Play Store and the Apple Store, SDPB app. You can just search SDPB and get that. Or, of course, Tech Radio on Facebook. Facebook.com/Tech Radio is that place you can interface with us 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, even when we're not on the air. SDPB.org is the website. You can go there, click on Listen. You'll get the podcast link for today as well as everything else from SDPB Radio. Have a great weekend, everybody.